Everybody, it is your host Jimmy, and we got the newest installment of the True to the Turf podcast, where we talk about all things sports. And this week, I mean, we got basketball, we got football, we got baseball, and you know, we had a good time. So, you know, let's get to it. I'm in a little bit of a different setting right now. My room is currently going through renovations. There was a little bit of a slab leak, so if you hear some noises, some dogs, maybe a little more of an echo than usual, it's because I'm, you know, in a different place than I usually am. I don't know how it's going to sound. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen, but we will see, you know. But, you know, let's get into it. First off, we got the NBA league, and obviously we got playoffs going around. There's some crazy stuff going on. First thing I want to talk about, the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Brooklyn Nets. The Bucks tied the series up at 3-3 with Giannis and Middleton combining for 68 points on the night yesterday. Kevin Durant was kind of, you know, he was a little lackluster, which is kind of unfair to KD considering he shot 15 for 30 and he, you know, it's 50%, but that just kind of proves KD's greatness. And, you know, we all know KD's probably the most efficient scorer of all time. He can get you 40 points on, you know, 15 shots. The man just, he's a straight bucket, straight up. And, you know, 15 for 30 is not going to cut it with KD because we expect a certain level of greatness. Kind of the same thing with LeBron. We expect, oh, triple-double, you know, with MJ. We expect, you know, 45 with Kobe. We expect 50, you know. All these different, you know, great players, they have certain expectations where, you know, you can't have, you know, a less efficient night than you usually have. You can't just shoot 50% and make mostly twos. You know, you got to get 32 points on, you know, 18 shots. You got to get 32 points on 17 shots. You can't get 32 points on 30 shots, KD, because, you know, it's just not going to go good for your team. Plus, you don't got no Kyrie right now. I mean, Harden is just hobbling up and down the court. I don't even know why he's playing, to keep it real with you guys. I mean, he looks like he got 1.5 legs. I don't know what's going on over there. But I do got a little bit of a bone to pick with Milwaukee. You guys are shooting way too many threes, man. You guys are shooting so many threes, and it's, quite frankly, it's pissing me the hell off. You guys, the one advantage you have over the Nets, you don't have more talent than the Nets, you know, but you have a size advantage over the Nets. I mean, you got all your seven-footers are all shooters. I understand that, but you got Giannis, okay? Man can't shoot. Stop shooting five threes a game. My brother, I mean, take it down to the rim and attack. They got no rim protection. I mean, they got KD sometimes. You know, who else on the Brooklyn Nets is going to defend at the rim? Name one person. Blake Griffin? Jeff Green? I mean, they don't even play DeAndre Jordan. So who? No one. So go and attack. Jrue Holiday, you're getting to the rim at ease. Stop shooting these goddamn threes, these turnaround threes are from the damn half-court logo. It's ridiculous. I mean, they could have had the game won by the end of the first half if they wanted to. But, you know, I get it. You know, they played a certain way all year. Obviously, threes are, you know, the new wave in basketball. And, you know, every team, is if you don't shoot the three, then you lose. Well, you know, yes, that might be true in the regular season. But playoffs, it's a whole different thing. In playoffs, you got to play to your opponent's weaknesses. You got to learn their strengths. You got to learn what they can defend, what they can't defend. If you keep on shooting threes, you're going to play right into the Nets' hands. And you're going to give KD, Harden some time to settle back in the game and just keep, you know, chipping away and chipping away. The Bucks were lucky to get a win here. I mean, I still would like them to double KD more than they did, but, you know, at the end of the day, they got the win, so I can't really, you know, say too much, you know. But I will say KD did seem a little bit out of energy after, I mean, he played every single second of Game 5, and that, I mean, that was a beautiful performance. It was like a piece of art. It was like a canvas that Picasso painted on, you know what I'm saying? He dropped, what was it, 47, 48, 17 rebounds and 10 assists? I mean, god damn. And he played 48 minutes, 0 seconds of rest on some Kobe 2012 type of things. You know what I'm saying? But he did seem a little bit like he kind of hit a wall, you know, in the middle of Game 6. And it's kind of expected, you know. We don't really see KD playing that type of games. And, you know, it's something he's not used to, but he had to do it to get the win. And now they got game seven. So we'll see. I mean, the biggest reason that Milwaukee is even in this series right now, that they won game six, is because of the duo that they got. You know, Giannis and Middleton, they were, I mean, they were fantastic, you know. And they got to keep it going in the next game if they want to knock out the Nets. You know, this is probably their best opportunity to knock out the Nets, just because, you know, Harden, like I said, he's playing on one leg. You know, it looks like the, you know, the man can't shoot no threes. It looks like the man can't size up nobody. It looks like the man just is not useful in any way right now. He looks too hurt. You know, I don't know why Steve Nash, let him, if you let him rest these next couple of days, maybe by game seven, you know, he can get there. You know, he can play at like 75%. And you can say, oh, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. Like, if Harden wasn't there, they wouldn't be there. Well, that's definitely not true, because Harden's not even playing. I forget he's on the damn court. His only highlight from yesterday was him being annoyed at Giannis's free throw routine taking too long. That was his one highlight. So what are we doing playing, like, forcing him to play these next two games when you guys didn't need him? That's what I don't understand. Obviously hindsight is 20/20. Obviously, you know, Harden's going, Kyrie's out. You're like, oh God, we need him for this win, you know. And Harden says, okay, I'm good. You know, it kind of seems like he cleared himself, not the doctors. And he's like, I'm good, I can play. But he can't play, clearly. The first game back, he was 1-for-10. I mean, it's a mismatch every time he's on the floor. It's basically a 4v5 right now. And I don't understand why he's there. But, you know, it's happening. Harden's injured. Kyrie's injured. It's all up to KD and the crew. So we got Giannis and Middleton. They got to put up another, you know, 65 together. I want to see something great from Giannis. Giannis has been doing things he's been doing in the regular season. You know, 30-plus points, this amount of whatever. You know, he keeps on shooting threes. You know, we don't need you to shoot threes, Giannis. Not against this team. Maybe if you're going up against, you know, prime Golden State, you got to start shooting some threes. But not against this team, man. Especially with Joe Harris struggling. I mean, that's their best three-point shooter right there. And he's not making threes. So this is the perfect moment to go into the lane, get 45, 15, and 8. Okay? And if they do that, I think the Bucks take game seven. I think the Nets are just too hurt. There's too many people in slumps. The only one not in a slump is KD. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm not the, you know, I tend to be wrong a lot. But in terms of sports, you know, I think I know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? So next thing I want to talk about, we got the Clippers versus the Jazz. Obviously, they're playing game six tonight. However, I want to talk about game five, and I want to talk about specifically Paul George, Mr., you know, actually, let me rephrase that. He's no longer Pandemic P. Right now, the way he's playing, it is Playoff P, capital P, okay? They beat the Jazz in game five. They had no Kawhi, you know, their best player, and Paul George goes for 37 points, 16 rebounds, and 5 assists. With that, his playoff averages so far this year are 26 points a game, 9 rebounds a game, and 5 assists on 46, 36, and 90 shooting splits, which is fantastic. He has, if the Clippers can't advance and Kawhi is still hurt, it's looking like he has an injury that unfortunately is going to require immediate surgery. If the, you know, Mr. Playoff P can get the Clippers pass the Utah Jazz, it's looking like Playoff P's the MVP of the playoffs for the Clippers so far, man. I mean, he's been absolutely phenomenal. We got to give all of our props to Playoff P, you know what I'm saying? Every time he has a bad game, Twitter is on his behind talking about, oh, he's trash, trade him for this, trade him for that. But anytime he has a good game, no one's talking. We don't hear no chirps because it doesn't fit the narrative. And it's normal, you know. There's certain players that the media just kind of doesn't appreciate their, you know, their good points, but they only highlight, you know, what they do bad. You know, for example, Russell Westbrook before, you know, the end of the regular season this year, everyone was talking about how bad he was. All the media talking about Russell Westbrook, just negative. His whole career, oh, he's a ball hog. When he does this, the Wizards only, you know, win this amount of times. But then as soon as they start winning, like, they're like, okay, we have to, like, actually start talking good about him. And it's just how it is. The media's so wishy-washy. Same thing with who's on the top of my head? Lonzo Ball had his best season in his career so far. He's He shot 75% from the free throw line. He was a 40% career free throw shooter. No one talked about that. No one talked about how Lonzo was, you know, efficiency-wise, one of the best shooters on the Pelicans this year. No one talks about that. They talk anytime he goes 1-for-11, you know, that's a post on SportsCenter. Anytime he goes, you know, anytime there's a bad highlight, post on SportsCenter. It's tough. I mean, it just happens. Some players are just kind of branded with negativity online, and Paul George is one of them. You know, and yes, a lot of it kind of came from him calling himself Playoff P back in Oklahoma, when he's never really had, you know, a sustainable amount of playoff success. The farthest he's gone is the Eastern Conference Finals, and I believe that was in 2012, 2013. So besides that, he hasn't done nothing, and he hasn't really been, you know, the big dog on a team. So I understand why people, you know, are a little bit dismissive of Paul George, but we also got to give him his flowers when he actually performs and exceeds our expectations. So I'm here to give you your flowers, Playoff P. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of you because, you know, you're not in the Lakers, you're on the Clippers, you're on the little brother team of LA. You know, no matter how many championships you guys win in the next few years, you will never be, you know, the main dog in LA, sad to say. But I'm giving you your roses. This is my sign of respect. You know, I know you're probably listening to this right now before your game today. So just listen to this, and I'm just telling you, here you go. Besides Playoff P, I mean, the role players for the Clippers are absolutely stepping up. We got Reggie Jackson, who's been on a tear since the end of the Dallas series, man. I mean, he's been scoring 20-plus points, you know, basically the whole damn playoff run, which is fantastic. And we've seen his ability to score the ball before, but never on like this consistent of a stretch. We've seen him score 42 in a crucial playoff game with Oklahoma City. We've seen him, you know, we know the type of player that Reggie Jackson is. We know that Reggie Jackson can score the ball. He's not the best facilitator, but he is a dog on the offensive side of the ball, and he's never a liability. He got 22 last night. We got Marcus Morris, who's coming alive after starting the series, shooting 1-for-12. I mean, he shot 7-for-8 in game 4. And he shot 3-for-4, game 5. And he seems to be coming up. Terrence Mann is an absolute dog for the Clippers, too, man. You see him yammed on Rudy Gobert. I mean, he is just a crucial piece for the Clippers starting 5. And credit to Ty Lue for actually starting him. Plus, you got Donovan Mitchell struggling to get anything going in the second half. I mean, you kind of knew where this game was going with all them threes that Utah was making, and they were struggling to take a big lead over the Clippers. It's like, you know, sometimes in sports you can feel these moments where, you know, one team is doing everything perfect. They're, you know, if it's football, they're scoring on every drive. If it's basketball, they're making all these shots. If it's baseball, they're scoring like 2 runs every inning. But then, you know, you kind of look and they're not even that far ahead. And you're like, whoa, like, you know, we're giving it our all. And like, why are we not pulling up ahead? And it's almost unexplainable. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like how the Utah Jazz can, I think they made, 17 threes in the first half, something like that. That is, like, I don't think people realize how ridiculous that is. I think the record for the most threes in a game is 29. And that was this year by the Bucks in the regular season. 17, that's what, that'd be on pace for 42, am I tripping? 42 or 32? Either way, it'd be on pace to break the record. And then in the second half, they cooled off. And, you know, they didn't go into halftime with a big enough lead. They could never go back into, you know, their shooting rhythm. They shot, 3-for-24 on the three in the second half. And, I mean, like I said, Paul George, Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, Terrence Mann all came alive and they kept on playing. And, you know, all credit to them. You know, Donovan Mitchell had a very rare bad game. You know, in a game where you get Bogdan to get, you know, 32 points on very good efficiency, you had a, you know, not so dominant double-double by Rudy Gobert. He had 17-10. He did get out-rebounded by Paul George, which is very surprising considering Rudy Gobert is the tallest man on the planet when, you know, with the height of 8'5". And the arms, the length of the Eiffel Tower. So that's a little, you know, underwhelming. But, you know, all of your players play good on Utah, except for Donovan Mitchell. He scored, you know, in the low 20s on horrible efficiency. But now in game six tonight, the Clippers need another playoff P moment. They need, you know, they need to win tonight. They can't win any other night. They're not going back to Utah and winning a game seven in Utah. They're not. They're just not doing it. So they need to win tonight. They need playoff P to come back. They need him to start off hot. They need Reggie Jackson to keep doing what he's doing. They need Marcus Morris to keep shooting threes. They need Terrence Mann to keep dunking on Rudy Gobert. If anything else is, I mean, it's just, you know, the butter on top. You know what I'm saying? If you get 10 boards from Zubats, that's perfect. If you get, you know, some playing time from someone else. If you get Rondo to make a three for once, perfect, you know. But I think Mitchell's bouncing back this game. I think Utah Jazz is going to play with an incredible amount of urgency because I think Utah knows that the Clippers have more shot creators in them. With the Clippers, you got Reggie Jackson can create his own shot. You got Marcus Morris who can create his own shot. You got Luke Kennard, who's an absolute sniper. Obviously, you got Paul George, you know, at one time, he was probably one of the best shot creators in the league. For Utah, you really only have two. You have Donovan Mitchell and Jordan Clarkson. And they usually never play on the, you know, at the same time. Because, you know, one's a six man, one's the starter. So they usually switch out for each other. So on the court at all times, Utah usually only has one guy that can create his own shot. While the Clippers are probably going to have two to three at all times. But Utah plays a better brand of team basketball. They have better team defense. They have better, you know, team passing, team rebounding, which is why they're so efficient and so, you know, basically why they're the number one seed. So we'll see. I think Donovan Mitchell's going to bounce back. I think he's going to have like 35 to 40 points, you know, which is basically what he's going to need to have if they want to win the game tonight. I think they're going to bring the series to game seven, and I think, you know, I don't think the Clippers are going to be able to do nothing in Utah. But then again, I am stupid, so maybe I'm just completely wrong, and Donovan Mitchell is going to score 15 on 5 for 31 shooting, so we'll see. But speaking about Trump, you know, there's, for the first time in a long time, we got two number one seeds possibly being knocked out in the second round. Utah Jazz, the one I just talked about. And now we got trouble in Philly, man. We got the Atlanta Hawks taking a 3-2 series lead over the Sixers after a 39-point performance by Ice Trey. Oh, my Lord. Man, Trey Young is playing up to a superstar level right now. You know, you got, when you have Embiid on pace to be, you know, have an absolute historic performance after the first quarter, he scored 17 on 8-for-8 shooting while holding his opponent Clint Capella to zero. You know, big old donut. Trey Young, you know, and Trey Young and company, you know, you got Sweet Lou. They were down by 26. 26 points. And they ended up winning by three. Why? Here's a couple reasons. Joel Embiid and Seth Curry were the only ones to score a field goal in the second half for the Sixers. Two players. Seth Curry scored 36 and Embiid got 39. And if you tell me before the game, Embiid's going to have 39 points, double-digit rebounds, plus Seth Curry is going to have 36 in the game. Plus, at some point in the game, the 76ers are going to have a 26-point lead. What are we all saying? Well, I mean, we're saying that the Sixers are going up 3-2 and that they blew out the Hawks. So what happened? Well, they started attacking the Sixers' weakness. Like I said, Milwaukee needs to attack Brooklyn's weakness. That's exactly what the Hawks did to Philadelphia. They know Ben Simmons can't shoot. They know they need him to initiate the offense. So he's going to have the ball in his hands. And every time he got the ball in his hands, slap on the wrist, foul him. Go to the free throw line. Could not make a shot. He was 4 for 14 on the free throw line. In the fourth quarter, he was okay. He was 2 for 4 or something. He was 50%. But the damage was already done. The momentum was already on the Hawks' side. So Ben Simmons, he said after the game, oh, I need to be more aggressive. I need to Well, no, you just need to make your damn free throws. Yes, you shot four shots. Yes, that's, you know, not good. But you had 14 free throws. If you make 8 of those, you know, you're in double-digit scoring. So it's not that you need to be more aggressive. Get your butt in the gym and shoot some damn free throws. If not, ride the pine. You know, Doc Rivers kind of changed his mind. At first he said, I'm not, you know, you're stupid if you think I'm going to take out Ben Simmons, an all-star at the end of the games, because you think he's going to be a liability. Well, clearly he's a liability even when you're up by 26 goddamn points. The man cannot make free throws. He cannot shoot. He will not shoot. And yes, I love Ben Simmons' game. He's an amazing passer, handles the ball great. You know, one of the top three defenders in the league right now. But the man cannot shoot and is hurting the Sixers immensely. But I think the main point of this game was what we kind of figured out in the Knicks series. Ice Trey, man, he's a bad man. You know, this series, we've seen him score 39 points. We've seen a game where he's dished out 18 assists. Right now against the Sixers, he's averaging 30 points and 11 assists, man. Oh, man, I think the momentum the Hawks have is too much to handle. Unless Doc, you know, comes up with a crazy game plan. And, you know, he's got to take out Simmons as soon as they start to foul him. You know, Doc will deal with another upset, you know, after just blowing a 26-point lead. And you kind of got to start thinking he's, you know, he was the coach for the Clippers last year. They blew like 3 different double-digit leads against the Denver Nuggets. They couldn't close them out. You know, he got fired, and I see Ty Lue. He's getting a lot of, you know, praise for his coach, and he's coaching his little butt off. Okay, and I think, I don't know, man. A part of me just wants Trae Young to make the finals, even though they'd probably lose. But a part of me feels bad for Doc Rivers, man, because he's such a great guy, but, you know, he keeps on choking these big leads. Every team he's on, he hasn't won a ring since 2008. And yes, he's a great coach. He's a great coach, but there's something up with his teams where they just let up big leads. And I don't know why. I don't know why. You have both stars on your team, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid playing, and you can't close them out? That's ridiculous. It's unacceptable. And now you got to think all the way back in the regular season where the Sixers could have traded Ben Simmons for James Harden. Imagine James Harden with Joel Embiid right now. That would be absolutely disgusting. Oh my God. That would be filthy. That would be unfair. Imagine a James Harden Embiid pick and roll. Just they would literally all they'd have to do is just run that play every single game. All game. It is ridiculous. I think the Hawks win. They're at home tonight, if I'm not mistaken. And I think they take the win. I think Trae Young goes for 40 for the first time in the series. I think he'll get another 8 assists, you know, somewhere around there. I think the Hawks got this game, you know. We'll see, though. But now we're going to move on to some baseball. We haven't talked about baseball in here in a long time, but we got a little bit of a sticky situation if you're catching on. The MLB just announced that they're officially starting to suspend players for using a type of pine tar or sticky type of substance that pitchers use to get a better grip on a baseball. Now, this is tricky, man. The reason I say it's a sticky situation, besides the obvious pun, is because the history of baseball. You know, since the beginning of time, pitchers have been altering the ball, you know, whether it's with spit, sunscreen, rosin, whatever they got, they're using it. And before, it was mainly used for grip, you know, besides the spit, you know, the spit balls, they were outlawed in like the late 20s or whatever. But they're mainly used for grip to get a better grip on the ball so they can actually throw the ball into the strike zone. That's fine. You know, no one complained about that. The batters liked it because they're saying, oh, I don't want to get hit with pitchers throwing faster and faster. You know, I don't want to get hit. I don't want to get hit by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, we've seen a player on the Mets, Kevin Pillar, get absolutely crushed in the face with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And, I mean, it was just not pretty, you know. But recently there was this, I believe it was a camera company, a Danish camera company, And their original use was for golf. It was a high definition camera that, you know, stopped, you know, certain video frame by frame. Well, baseball players started getting their hands on it and found out that they could see every single frame after they threw a pitch. They could see every single time a ball spinned. Every single one. So with that, a new term came out for baseball called RPM, which you might have heard if you've been keeping up with baseball. It's called rotations per minute, which is, you know, mainly for a pitch being thrown. And I don't want to get into the whole details and, you know, bore you guys with all these big scientific words. But in short, the higher the RPM, the harder the ball is to hit. And since RPM has come about, pitchers were trying to increase it naturally, but the increase was very minimal to notice a difference naturally. You know, they were trying their hardest and figured out, I can't do this by myself. I need some external help. So they say, well, what's my spin rate increase if I use, you know, this substance? What's my spin rate increase if I use this substance? What about this substance and this one? And then finally, they find this thing. This pro power lifter made it. It's called SpiderTac. One of the stickiest substances in the world. And when I'm talking sticky, I mean sticky. You know, you could put it on your palm, slap it on there like that. Open up your hand. Just place it down on a brick. Lift it up and the brick will be lifted just by the palm of your hand. Like not even gripping the brick, just by the palm of your hand, the brick will go up with you. That's how sticky it is. And with all this new technology, all the cameras, the SpiderTac, pitchers found out I can increase my spin rate, you know, by hundreds. Hundreds. People, that doesn't really sound like a crazy amount, but in terms of baseball, you know, it turns an average fastball into an almost unhittable fastball. You know, and you got two names that are kind of the faces of the scandal that's going on right now. We got Trevor Bauer of the Los Angeles Dodgers and Gerrit Cole. And to kind of understand the relationship, I got to go back all the way back. They were college teammates at UCLA, and it's reported that they absolutely hated each other. They despised each other. They never wanted to talk to each other ever again after they got drafted. Their head coach said he'd be surprised if they ever had a conversation with one another ever again. So basically, you know, they don't really get along that well. Gerrit Cole had a lot of potential in his early years. He could never really figure it out. There's a kind of a trend of pitchers, kind of like a Tyler Glasnow before this year, where they have really good stuff, but they can never find the strike zone and they can never be consistent. Maybe a Chris Archer from 10 years back. You know, they have this electric stuff, but they just can't quite figure it out. So he's kind of like a 4 ERA type of guy on the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then all of a sudden, he gets traded to Houston. Obviously, we know the cheating history in Houston. They're very advanced technologically, you know, to say the least. They get Gerrit Cole, and immediately, within the first year, they turn him into a Cy Young pitcher. The best pitcher, you know, in the MLB. And why? Well, Trevor Bauer calls him out. They say, well, Houston just increases RPM by a few hundred. Well, how the hell do they do that, you know? How the hell do you turn a 4 ERA guy who can't figure nothing out into a guy with a low 2 ERA and a Cy Young Award winner overnight? And since then, he's been the second best pitcher in baseball besides DeGrom. Since then, he's gotten a massive contract. Since then, he is, you know, basically unhittable. And it's because of the SpiderTac. And it's actually crazy how, you know, this kind of flamed out to the rest of the league. You know, Trevor Bauer has been big on banning it, and he's been very open about using it. You know, Trevor Bauer is kind of in the same boat as Gerrit Cole. A lot of great stuff, could never really be consistent. And then all of a sudden, he goes to Cincinnati, and he says to himself, well, he's using it. These pitchers are using it. Literally every single pitcher is using it. I'm going to use it. You know, whatever. I'm going to use it. I don't care. You know, they're obviously not banning it. I'm not going to hide it. he would come out and basically tell everybody, yes, I am using substance. I am using it. And it was the best season he pitched ever. On the Cincinnati Reds, when he won the Cy Young, that year, the pitching rotation as a total had the highest spin rate in baseball. And you can say, well, maybe they just spin the ball really well. You never know. Now that he's on the Dodgers now have the highest spin rate in baseball. It's because of that man. And he's so open about it. He will literally record videos and post them online of him putting on the spider tack and, you know, palming a baseball like nothing. And then we'll be finally did something about it. So I'm sure Bauer's very happy. But there's kind of another consequence, something I didn't expect. We got a pitcher, Tyler Glasnow. He just got an arm injury. I think it was a partial UCL tear, which is, you know, borderline Tommy John surgery. So he might be out for quite a bit of time. And he was in the press conference absolutely pissed about this. He said, why the hell are we banning this substance? Pitchers have been using this substance for years. Pitchers have been using some type of substance since the beginning of baseball. You know, he said, overnight, the next game, I had to stop using the substance. I had to dig my fingers deeper into the baseball to get a better grip. I had to, you know, use more of my arm. I had to use this and that. And he basically blamed not being able to use a substance for that injury. And then I started thinking, wow, you know, how does the MLB combat this? You know, I mean, I don't really know. I feel like in baseball, there's always some type of scandal in terms of either the pitchers are using something or the batters are using something. Whether, you know, batters are on steroids, they're corking their bats, they're doing something. And then all of a sudden, it's the pitchers. And, you know, immediately they kind of get, you know, shut down. Because it's what the baseball, I think the league average right now, hitters are hitting, what, like 230? The lowest it's been in, you know, centuries. But it's interesting to see, you know, the two kind of sides of it. That pitchers are for it and pitchers are against it, but they feel like they have to use it to kind of keep up. And Tyler Glasnow seems like he's completely for it. You know, Trevor Bauer's on the boat where, you know, I'd rather have this not in the game and affect it too bad. You know, I don't care if I don't, you know, do as good without it, but I just don't want it in the game, making, you know, kind of a older traditional type of thought process on it. So I don't know how MLB is going to kind of solve this problem, because obviously they don't want their best pitchers to be going through some injuries. Maybe allow some type of substance, but not just ban spider tag. Maybe, you know, they literally have a bag of rosin behind the bag to get a better grip. So who cares if they're using some type of thing to get a grip? That's what I kind of don't understand. Obviously, I don't think they should be using something that can increase their spin rate by that much. I don't think they should just be kind of, you know, raw dogging the baseball, essentially. I think they should be using some type of thing to get a better grip. I don't really care what it is, as long as it doesn't affect the game to the point that it has today. But we'll see. We don't really know too much about, you know, it yet, even as knowledgeable as I am about the fact about it right now. I still don't know all the details. I still don't know, you know, why it affects it like it does. I still don't know, you know, what else they could use that, I don't know if they can even use another type of grip that, you know, wouldn't affect the spin rate. I don't know, but, you know, it's been one of the most interesting things in baseball in quite a little bit, besides the Dodgers and Padres rivalry, but we'll see. Next, we got NFL, man. We got some things going down there in Tennessee. We got Julio Jones being traded to the Titans for a bag of chips and some napkins. He got traded for a second round pick and a fourth round pick. And the first thing I got to say is, oh, Falcons, what are we doing here, man? You just got Kyle Pitts. You got Calvin Ridley. You got Matt Ryan. Why are you trading Julio Jones? Yes, I know your defense is bad. Yes, okay, everyone knows that. The whole league that scored 50 a game on you knows that, besides the Raiders when we scored 9 points against you, but we don't talk about that, okay? Why are we trading him? And yes, I know you trade him to the AFC because you don't want to play him in the NFC, but oh my God, why are we trading him? I don't understand. Obviously, this is beautiful for the Titans. This immediately launches them into a serious threat to win the Super Bowl. And there was a lot of disrespect on my boy Ryan Tannehill, you know, because Julio said, I don't care what team I go to. I just want to go to a winning team with a big arm quarterback. Everyone's like, you know, Green Bay, Seattle, blah, blah, blah. You know, no one really thought, like, even me, when I said he should go to a certain place, I never, you know, thought Tennessee. I kind of forget about Tennessee, you know, it's Tennessee. I don't really think about them, but, you know, everyone's kind of disrespecting Ryan Tannehill, saying, oh, you know, that he's a check down, man. He's a check down, check down. That's just not true, man. Look, on deep throws in the last year, he posted a 100.9 passer rating, a 5-2 touchdown to interception ratio. Although, you know, he didn't throw many deep balls. He only gained about 515 yards on deep passes. When he does throw them, they usually do pretty damn good. And now in terms of the AFC South division, I mean, the Titans are going to run the division now for however long Julio Jones is on the team. Obviously, you got the Jaguars down there with Tebow, capital T-E on the bow, and Golden Boy Trevor Lawrence. We don't know how well Trevor Lawrence will do. We don't know how long it's going to take them to become a serious threat in the league. But I think it's absolutely crazy, man, how the NFL has changed so much these past few years. If you took someone, you know, from 2016, 4 years ago, they're in a coma, they wake up, you know, they're a huge football fan. They wake up, they say, Doc, what happened to football? You know, Doc shows them, you know, are the Patriots still good? No, they're not good. Oh my God, Brady finally retired? Well, no, he's on the Buccaneers. Oh, okay, but like, is he like a backup now? Or no, he's a starter on the Bucs and they just won a Super Bowl. He's still pretty good. He's probably going to play until he's about 50 years old. He's probably going to win like one or two more Super Bowls, you know, possibly MVP. Oh man, what about some of the young QBs? You know, what about, you know, Andrew Luck? What about, oh, Andrew Luck? Yeah, no, he retired. Wait, what? Yeah, Andrew Luck retired. He had constant injuries. He kind of lost love for the game. Yeah. Oh, what about the Raiders? They just made the playoffs. Derek Carr, he's had the best, you know, season of the year. I know he had a leg injury, but I'm sure he probably recovered, and now the Raiders are doing really good, huh? Nope, the Raiders are very mediocre. They haven't sniffed the playoffs since. Derek Carr's still pretty good, but people seem to hate on him for no reason. We have no defense. There's no offense, really, besides Josh Jacobs and Darren Waller. We got John Gruden back, though, so that's something. Oh, what about the Packers? You know, last time I checked, they look like they were, you know, on pace to win another. Nope, Packers are probably going to lose Aaron Rodgers. Oh, does Aaron Rodgers suck? Nope. Aaron Rodgers just came off of a unanimous MVP season. He threw over 40 touchdowns and threw less than 5 interceptions. But he's really mad that they're not, you know, extending him for a long time, even though he probably deserves it. And he's also a little bit upset because they drafted a quarterback in the first round instead of a receiver. And they did it without telling him. Oh, okay. Well, that's something. And it's crazy because it's like that in all sports. Like, you know, a few years ago, Kawhi was on the Spurs. Blake Griffin was still dunking over Paul Gasol on the Clippers. And it's wild, man. Something I love about sports, one of the main things I love about sports, the reason I want to do this for the rest of my life is because things always change. Things are always moving. And, you know, you can never get enough of it. You know, people like reality TV shows because of, you know, drama and storyline. People like regular TV show because of drama and storyline. Sports has so much drama and storyline. It is ridiculous. But with that being said, I hope you guys all enjoyed this episode of the True to the Turf podcast. I hope this episode was great. I hope there's no audio issues. I hope there's no huge echo. I do feel a little bit uncomfortable, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, because I'm just not in the usual spot where I do my recordings. But, you know, I still had fun with all this, and hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you guys all had a beautiful day. And without further ado, I'll see you guys later. We'll be right back.